Assault Wrestling Alliance brings professional wrestling back to Waldorf on Saturday, September 21st. Join us for hard-hitting, non-stop professional wrestling action featuring all your favorite AWA stars as well as TNA wrestling star Alexander Hammerstone. Tickets are available now, so grab yours and see us at the Assault Asylum on Saturday, September 21st.
What is up, and welcome back to another episode of the Wizards Podcast. I'm your host, Greg Finberg. It's good to be back. We took a bit of a break. I think this is the first episode that I'm putting out in 2 weeks. It was a much-needed break for me because, I mean, since I started the pod, I think in early October, I haven't gone a week without posting one. We're nearing 50 episodes, and we're nearing October. And there's even been ones where I've done multiple episodes in a week. So I've tried to be consistent with it, but sometimes there's just nothing going on. And that's been the case the last couple of weeks. Nothing's happened and nothing's really going to happen until training camp begins in September. So again, if I feel like there's nothing exciting for me to talk about on my pod, not only does that not motivate me to want to make an episode, but if I don't want to record the episode, if I don't think it's interesting, then why would anybody care to listen to the episode that I already firsthand don't think is interesting? So again, I'm never going to put something out just to put something out. I want to make sure that there's substance and there's reason to listen. Again, if I don't feel like recording it, then why would anybody really feel like listening to it? But I'm here and I'm back and recording, which clearly means that something happened. And there's a couple things that I want to talk about. The Wizards waiving Eugene Omorui. I want to talk about the decision to move on from Eugene, plus how that factors into the last roster spot, who gets it, who doesn't. Talk about that. I want to talk about the schedule release because obviously you can't predict all 82 games. There's injuries, there's trades, there's, you know, anomalies. A lot of stuff can happen. But I want to talk about some key games, some big matchups for the Wizards, and kind of break down the schedule as best as I can, while also discussing a post that I made on Twitter that went viral. I think it's like 8.4 million views on it, where I was just trying to see what people thought the Wizards record would be. And it just turned into a bunch of people trying to go viral and quote tweeting it. Making fun of the Wizards, obviously, you know, taking some fun jabs. So I want to talk about my thoughts on that post as well. But that's kind of all we got. I feel like this stuff's interesting, so that's why I want to talk about it. I hope you do as well, but it's tough. It's tough. You probably haven't read a single thing about the Wizards in a couple weeks, and there's a reason for it, because nothing's happening. So I want to get this episode out, and I want to get into it right away. So the first thing that I want to talk about is the actual business, the side of things, and that's Eugene Omorui getting waived. Obviously, part of the business. You know, Eugene, I'm sure, is a great dude. Worked his way from an undrafted free agent to the Thunder, to the Pistons, out of Rutgers. You know, he really worked his way into where he is now. And he got a shot with the Pistons, played well against the Wizards 2 years ago, signed a contract with the Wizards last season. And look, he got it converted, I think, from a two-way to a standard deal at some point last season, and he earned that. He was a grinder, someone that was always the first person, along with Anthony Gill, off the bench, giving high fives. Clearly was a very well-liked, high-energy, high-spirited type of guy that you kind of want on the end of your bench. And I even said the first 20 to 25 games for the Wizards last year, it was just starters would come in, they would not really look like they gave any type of ounce of effort or any type of care in the world how the game resulted. They'd lose a lot, and then the scrubs would come in, or I shouldn't say scrubs, the end of the bench guys would come in. You know, even Ryan Rollins, when he was here, Anthony Gill would play, Johnny Davis. Like, they'd come in at the end of these games, and Omorui was part of that group. And every time he'd come in the game, the Wizards would be down like 22, and I swear they'd cut it to like 9 with like 30 seconds left. But his effort, his energy at the end of games was very noticeable. He's playing well, and shooting efficiently. Like, he was solid. And as an undersized big, you know, he's not tall or strong enough to play the center position or the power forward position, but he's also not quick enough and can't shoot well enough to play the forward. So he's kind of a tweener, and that's kind of the thing that not a lot of NBA teams are looking for or want, because it's a tough fit. So it was always going to be tough for Eugene. And I thought he earned that standard deal last year. He played great in limited minutes, but it kind of waned as the season went on. You know, that spark plug that he used to be in the beginning kind of faded. Shot was inefficient. There were games where he'd just go 0 for from three, not even close on some of those attempts. Defensively, a couple games where he fouled out because he was in the wrong spot, wasn't big enough to body up the centers, quick enough to stay with guards or forwards, and he'd foul a lot. So it really didn't work out towards the end of the year. So you knew Eugene had to be great in summer league, got added to the summer league team, which I didn't think would happen, and he started the first game against Atlanta. 24 minutes, 1 of 9 from the field, 8 points, 5 rebounds, 4 steals, which is impressive, but 3 turnovers and -5. Didn't close out the game in what was Washington's first win of summer league, and then benched the entire last 4 games of summer league. So you hate to see it because it's a one-off. Maybe he would add a better game if he played again, but I think the Wizards kind of saw Eugene for what he kind of is in that game, and they really didn't need to see much, so they benched him, and then they ended up waiving him on, I think, Thursday. It was Wednesday or Thursday of this week, the 21st or 22nd of August. But they ended up waiving him, which is something that I expected. I talked about this in my pod a couple of weeks ago during free agency. At that point, I thought the Wizards had about 17 guys for 15 roster spots. And I talked about Omoruyi as the first guy that I would waive, and that I thought the Wizards would waive, and they ended up doing that. So it's an expected move, not a surprise at all. I'm a little surprised that he didn't even get an invite to training camp, but I guess maybe they want to use that spot elsewhere, bring in someone that they might not know as well as Eugene. I think the jury is out on Omoruyi. You know, high energy type of guy, gonna bang down low, always give it his all. But I just don't think they see it, especially with him being 27, not really young, doesn't have potential, so doesn't make sense for the team. So I completely get it. So that's the move that they made. Here's kind of the fallout from that. Now the Wizards are sat with 16 players on their roster under contract for 15 spots. And there's a couple ways that they could go. I would say right now there's 3 players on the roster bubble for competing, you know, 3 guys kind of competing for 2 spots. And that's Patrick Bowen Jr., Johnny Davis, and Anthony Gill. And I'll break down those three and kind of why I think they will make it or won't make it, the case for all of them in a second. But I do want to mention one guy that's been mentioned a lot, and that's Jared Butler, not Junior. I always confuse him with Patrick Bowman Jr. Just Jared Butler, point guard from Baylor. Wizards brought him over after a great summer league last year that he had with the Thunder. He was awesome, especially at the end of the season when Tyus was out. He backed up Poole, and he just put together some really tremendous performances. There was one game against Chicago on the road where he was just outstanding. I think he had a double-double with points and assists. He's great. And I like his defense a lot as well. So again, the thing that I've seen with him is he is on a non-guaranteed contract, whereas Davis, Gill, Baldwin Jr., they're guaranteed. But again, with Jared Butler, they converted him towards the end of last season to that deal. They like him. He proved himself. And I wouldn't get taking any of the guys I just named over him because he's better than them. And he's still young. I think he's 24, maybe 25, but he's still young. He's still got a ways to go. He's still got good potential, two-way potential as well. With, you know, for a Wizards team looking for guards that can defend, he's arguably the best defensive guard on this team. And now that they're bringing Brogdon, I don't know, but he's great on defense. So again, it would be really confusing, very odd. I think the wrong decision if they decided, well, let's just not guarantee his deal, because that's stupid. You're not fighting the salary cap. You're not winning anything this year. You have a lot of cap space. You have decent room. You can eat one of these cheaper contracts, even if it's guaranteed, to maintain the talent that you have and keep Jared Butler. So I don't think he's even close to being on that bubble. And I just wanted to mention that. Let's first talk about Anthony Gill. Talk about him first because he's the veteran of this group. I at least own that. Look, the thing about Gill is he just signed, I think it's a 1 or 2 year deal. I think it's a 1 year deal, but it's a vet minimum contract around like 2.1 million. And look, for people saying that Gill won't be cut just because they recently signed him, I direct you to this time last year when in September, the Wizards signed Taj Gibson to a 2-year deal, and you said, okay, that's confusing, but Sure, I get it. Now they got to waive somebody else. But they ended up waiving Taj Gibson before training camp even ended. And you say, well, why would they do that? I don't know. Maybe they were trying to reward him for being a good veteran, give him some money. Maybe they just wanted a veteran to be there for training camp and teach some of the young guys before they moved on. I don't know, but they did it. It was confusing, but maybe that's a trend that you notice. Maybe they signed Anthony Gill and they can still cut him. Now, I don't think they should do that. I was one of the most vocal Wizards people that cover the Wizards that said they should re-sign Gill because you can't just have a bunch of young guys running around and not really having a vet presence. I mean, look what happened in Houston when that was the case. You need guys like Gill who people look up to, first guy into the gym, last out. Always first off the bench, great energy guy, one of the most, if not the most, well-respected person in the Wizards organization at this moment. He's a guy that you want around on a young team that you're trying to build a culture, and cutting him instead of a guy like Baldwin Jr. or Davis, like I'd rather keep Gil, and you can call me crazy for that because he's a lot older and he has, he's kind of capped on how skillful he's going to be, but I really value that leadership that he brings, and again, call me crazy, but I don't see him getting cut. But I'm just saying it is possible, looking at how they handled Taj Gibson's situation last year, for him to get cut, even though they just re-signed him. So that's Gil. Number two is Johnny Davis, and look, number 10 pick 2 years ago, probably shouldn't have been number 10 pick. We can pretty much all agree on that, unless you're Tommy Shepard, but. Even Tommy Shepard should probably sit here and agree that he took him way too high. He's still young. He's only 22 years old. He still has potential, especially on the defensive end. We saw he could really move his feet on defense. Even picked up a couple blocks, some steals. He's a solid defensive player. But the shot, the offensive bag, it's not there. I'd even say it's kind of non-existent. I mean, there was a game against Minnesota last year where he was 3 of 3 from three. And I don't think he touched the rim on any of them. And then there's games like Summer League where he pulls up from three when the Wizards are up 7 with 35 seconds left and airballs it. And you're like, well, what is that? How are you taking a step back? I thought we figured this out. So I again, I've been one of the more vocal Johnny Davis advocates, even though for some reason he blocked me on Twitter, even though I've never, never, never said anything disrespectful or mean. Always tried to be as polite as possible, even if I am talking about some of his struggles. He's nearing the point of put up or shut up territory where, yeah, you're the number 10 pick, you're only in year three, but this might be your last chance to prove your worth. This might be your last chance to show that you have something. It might be the last season where you being a number 10 pick matters to the people building the roster. Because if you come out and you lay an egg again this year and you look the same or even worse than you did the following season, that number 10 pick label isn't going to do much for you. It's what have you done for me so far, not what did you used to do for Wisconsin. And Johnny Davis hasn't done much for this team, which I hate to say because I've been pulling for him. But I think that number 10 pick, that potential that he has, that carries him to a roster spot, even if it's the final one. But again, for Davis, you just hope, even if he makes the roster, that he actually gets playing time because you'd hate to see for a guy like Johnny Davis, yeah, he makes the roster, but he doesn't play, and then you're putting him down in the G League again to get some minutes, and then you bring him up for garbage time. It's like, if you want to do this and you want to keep him on the team, he's your number 10 pick. I know you didn't draft him, but like, let's at least give him a shot. Let's see what he can do. And I think that won't come until after the deadline, unfortunately. You got to trade Brogdon, you would hope. Maybe Kyle Kuzma is gone. I don't know. But that opens certainly a lot of minutes, a lot of shots. There's different pathways to it, and it depends how cautious they are on Bob Carrington and Keyshawn George and those guys that play pretty similar positions and could always take over and take Davis's spot. But I do think Johnny Davis is going to make the roster this year, and that leaves PBJ, that leaves Patrick Baldwin Jr. I wouldn't say he's a throw-in into the pool trade, but I think you can kind of say he's a throw-in into the pool trade. Him and Rollins both. I mean, former number 26 pick, I believe, or maybe number 30 pick. I think 26. No, 28. Some late first in 2022. Same draft as Davis. He was put into that pool trade. Came over last year. He's a guy that has potential as like a 3 and D wing, a bigger 3-and-D wing. I always compared him to Michael Porter Jr. You know, I think he's 6'9 or 6'10. PBJ is great length. You'd hope he could be a good shot blocker and a decent defender. And he's a good shooter on paper, not even on paper, but like in hypotheticals. Like you'd hope that he'd be a good shooter. He's shown flashes of being a good shooter, but the production isn't there. 4 points, 3 rebounds per game in 38 appearances last year for Washington, but inefficient at that. I mean, 38% shooting from the field, that's not going to cut it. 32% from three, that's not going to cut it. And you factor in, he doesn't use his 6'10 frame at all. I mean, he doesn't put the ball on the deck. 63% of Patrick Baldwin Jr. shots come from three, which is crazy considering that he's 6'10" and has good length and can finish around the rim. But again, decides to just sit on the perimeter and take the easy threes because that's what defenses give him. And he doesn't work for better shots. So again, that's an issue when you're shooting 63% of your shots from three, only making 32% of your threes, and you're not putting the ball on the deck as a 6'10" power forward. So what are you doing for me? He's still young. I think he's 21, maybe 22. Pretty sure he's 21. And not even on offense. That's not even where I get most frustrated. On defense, it seems like PBJ is always in the wrong spot. He's always rotating late. He's always fouling. There's a couple games where he fouled out at the end of last year. Hasn't developed into a shot blocker like you would hope. Wasn't drafted or signed by this regime. And when you put all those things together, the poor offense, the inefficient shooting, not using his frame the right way, always in, you know, a lot of times in the wrong spot on defense, fouling a lot, hasn't developed into a great 3-point shooter or a great shot blocker at his size and his frame. Wasn't drafted by Will Dawkins, wasn't signed by Will Dawkins, was kind of a throw in the Jordan Poole trade. They already caught Ryan Rollins, albeit for outside of the court activities. I think Patrick Baldwin Jr. is the most expendable of this group. I get it, he still has potential, but you're giving him decent chances. I mean, even in summer league, if he didn't make that game winner, that game winning three, like I don't really know what else he did in summer league. He wasn't great. And for a guy in year three, same as I said for Johnny Davis, you're a former first round pick. You're in your third year, and you don't even look like a top five player on the Wizards summer league team. So what are we sitting at here? You really think he shouldn't make the roster? So I don't think so. And if I had to choose, it'd be Patrick Baldwin Jr. that gets waived. You keep Gil, you keep Davis, you got your 15-man roster. And it's always possible where PBJ clears waivers and you still have a final two-way spot. So if that's the case, I'd love to get him on the go-go. I still think he can be something, but he just hasn't shown it yet. And I don't think that his production coupled with his potential, I don't think it warrants a roster spot, at least at the moment. So that's what I want to talk about kind of on the business side of things with the Wizards roster moves. The next thing that I do want to mention is the tweet that I put out. I think this was last week. I was actually at a doctor's appointment when the Wizards schedule came out. So I wanted to put some tweets out. I wanted to get some, you know, Wizards fans, so that you don't have to go through the whole schedule and see, kind of put everything in one spot. So I tweeted about the rookie games that we're playing, the big matchups against NBA legends like Curry and LeBron, home opener against Boston, national TV games. And after that, I tweeted, the Wizards will go, and then I put a blank, and then I said in 2024-25. So basically, what will the Wizards record be this season? And I put a picture of Sar, Bob, and Keyshawn from Summer League rookie photo shoots. Just like a looks like a regular picture of them, didn't think much of it. I mean, it got 8.4 million views, mainly because a lot of people were quote tweeting it and saying some funny stuff. I mean, one guy filled in the blank and said the Wizards will go out there and try their best. Like that was funny. Some guy said this looks like the cast of a Disney movie. Like those are funny and genuinely made me laugh. I get it. But what I found crazy is like the amount of people, I guarantee at least like 45 to 60 people. Different people quote tweeted those exact things to try to go viral. And like 50 people were saying the same line about this looks like a Disney movie. And the same 50 people were saying this, the Wizards will go out there and try their best. Like it is crazy to see how the monetization of Twitter has like made people just try to go viral, try to get views on their stuff. And it is crazy how the weirdest things will get you views. Like I could tweet out like the Wizards traded Daniel Gafford, and that maybe got like 60,000 views on Twitter. And then all I do is just try to see what people do you think the Wizards are going to go this year? And obviously not trying to get views on that. I want to see what my followers think. And that gets nearly 9 million views. So like it is weird to see how much not only people want to go viral, but I also tweeted this under that one. It's crazy to see the state of NBA fandom, especially on an app like Twitter, where most people are either front runners where they're rooting for the best teams like Boston, obviously your Lakers fans, Knicks fans, Warriors fans, all of those front running teams. And you also have, which is the most infuriating thing for me, is people that are fans of individual players. I'll never get it, and I'll never try to get it. But that is one of the things that pisses me off the most. Like people that are just LeBron James fans and like were fans of the Cavs, then now they're fans of the Heat all of a sudden, and then they're back to Cavs fans, and now they're Lakers fans. Like you are a fan of a top two player of all time. I'm not going to get into that, MJ versus LeBron, but a top two player of all time. And so no wonder, like you're always going to be rooting for a team that's probably in the playoffs for 8 straight years, I think, in the finals, winning 4 rings. Like, how is that fun for you? You're always rooting for a team that's trying to compete. You don't like you didn't earn that. You didn't go through losing seasons. The bottom part of your losing seasons is like the 1 year in LA that LeBron didn't make the playoffs. But what did you do after that? You got Anthony Davis and you won a ring. Like you're always competing. Like I don't get what the fun in that is, just following the one of the best players of all time from team to team. You see it with Steph Curry as well. And the Warriors fans are the biggest front runners because these guys know nothing about basketball. All they know is Steph Curry, Klay Thompson, and the Warriors. And they only became Warriors fans in 2015-16 when they were the greatest team, 2016-17 when they were the greatest regular season team of all time. And now I'm sure a lot of those Warriors fans are still Warriors fans, but a lot of them have moved on to the Celtics and a lot of them have moved on to the Lakers. And I think the joy in sports is in the turmoil. It's in the struggles. That's where the joy is. When you really have to watch your team go out and win 15 of 82 games, that makes the season that they finally win 50 games and win a ring that much more special. Like you saw it with Celtics fans, and I don't think a lot of them are front runners because they've just always been good. But like there was a video of Barstool Sports, like the Celtics fans there, they won the ring, the title this year, and they just like high-fived each other like it was nothing. It's like they're numb to it. They win all the time. If the Wizards win a ring, you will see me post a video. I will be in tears. I don't even know if I will be able to tweet because I would be so overcome with emotion. And I would only become overcome with that much emotion because I have never missed a Wizards game since 2014. I've watched every game. They have been the worst team, one of the most laughed at franchises for the last decade. And once they win a ring, that's going to mean something to me. And the only reason it'll mean something to me is because I went through the tough times. Imagine if I just stopped watching Wizards games when they sucked. And then I just spawned in when they were in the playoffs. I don't, I mean, call me crazy, call me a different type of fan, but like I don't find fun in that. I don't find joy in that because I wasn't there for the tough times. So like why should I get to experience this fun run that they're on now? And I tweeted that and I said the amount of casuals saying who are these guys? Because there were so many people on this tweet saying I'm just like call me a casual, but who even are these dudes? Talking about the number 2 pick Alex Saar in this most recent draft, number 14 pick, and I get it a little bit more with Bob Carrington, number 14 pick, only 19, lesser known college guy. I definitely understand it with Keyshawn George, back end of the first round, not really a big name guy, didn't go to a huge name school like Miami. Same with Carrington at Pitt. Saar didn't play college ball. But if you are an NBA fan, like you should at least know who the number 2 pick is in this draft. And if you don't, then I'm going to call you a casual because if you're not watching the draft, what are you doing? Like you should know it. And it's possible that your team is good and might not have a pick in the draft, but are you just not watching any type of coverage on the draft? And this is an issue, honestly, that goes further than this, and I don't want to rant about it too much, but if ESPN actually did any lick of coverage on the actual prospects in this draft class instead of glazing Bronny James for the entire draft process, then people might know who I posted in that picture. But because there was very limited coverage on Alex Saar, who was presumed to be one of the, if not the best prospects in this class, just because he wasn't going to get clicks and views, then people might know who these guys are. But it's because of ESPN and sites like that, they just care about clicks, just try to use big name players like Bronny James to talk about. They're obviously not going to know who these guys are. So I don't blame them. But it is crazy to see the amount of people that don't know the number two overall pick, partly because of how the media decides to only cover big name guys, and not actually cover people that matter. But it shows that people on this on Twitter don't know ball. Like they talk about Curry and LeBron and all these things, but they just follow the best players. They jump from best team to best team. And that's why it's going to be so great for us Wizards fans that have endured all of the turmoil and the struggle of the last. Honestly, you haven't seen a chip. You haven't seen them reach the conference final since 79. That's 21 years. That's 45 years. And I'm sure it's going to be 50 by the time they get back, probably. But like, this is why we watch. And I'm sorry if this is a rant, but I felt like I needed to say this. That pissed me off, the lack of knowledge and people just making fun of it. Like, who even are these dudes? It's an indictment on yourself if you're saying that as a fan, because if you don't know the most recent number two pick, then you don't know ball, and you're just kind of a fair weather fan. I'm sorry. That's my point on it. So I did want to talk about that because that shit kind of pissed me off. But now we can get to the final thing of this episode, and that's the schedule release that came out last week. Obviously, I can't say I probably could sit here and go through all 82 games and tell you exactly how the Wizards are going to find a way to lose. Most of them will probably just be 20 plus point blowouts, but there are some fun games this year, definitely. And I want to start obviously with the first game. The Wizards are opening at home. They're opening at Capital One Arena for the first time since 2018. A 2018 game that the Wizards lost by one to Miami. John dropped 26. Jeff Green dropped 17 off the bench. So clearly that kind of dates that. It was a while. The Wizards always start on the road. But again, they push the Wizards back to Thursday. So they don't even obviously play the two game set on opening night, which is Tuesday. Again, knew that wasn't going to happen. Why would they ever put the Wizards in prime time to start the year? But again, Wednesday, they don't even play, which sucks because you got to wait even longer. But they do open at home, which is cool. The only thing is they set the Wizards up for failure because they got to play the defending champs, the Boston Celtics, at home to start the year. They will probably lose by 20, maybe even more. I mean, if you watched last year, they beat Memphis in their home opener in a great game. But then they turned around. They had to play Boston, I think, the next night or two nights later, and they got massacred. So I hope it's at least competitive. I hope that it's not just a walk into the arena, end of the first quarter, down 15, non-competitive game, because that sucks. Honestly, the worst part isn't going to be the 20-point loss. It's going to be the fact that they're playing a neutral site. Honestly, even a road game for their home opener, because again, the Celtics always have a good traveling fan base, but especially all the front runners now that they just won a ring. They're all going to come out in full force with their Tatum jerseys that they literally just bought after they won the title. And they're going to come out and they're going to be, it's going to be a sea of green. It really is, which is sad. But again, the Wizards aren't great. The Celtics just won the title. So it's going to be at best the neutral site game in the home opener, which is just so deflating. And it's a reality check for the Wizards. It's exciting to start a new season. You have some cool new players that you want to see. You want to see the rookies, but I think they're gonna get killed. I hope they don't. It would be, and you're gonna get mad at me because you want Cooper Flagg, and I get it. But look, this team's gonna suck anyway. Let's have fun. Imagine they shock the world, win this game, and then if they win this game, I'm going to tweet out the banner. The Wizards will hang a banner, beat the defending champs in their home opener in 2024-25, and I will feel no remorse for it. I won't feel like a loser for doing it. I will tweet out the Wizards hanging that banner if they actually beat the Celtics in that first game, because that's going to be an unreal upset and it's going to be a fun win. It's in what's going to be the start of a really long and difficult season. It'll be nice to just get one big upset. And I don't think it's going to happen, but that would be cool. And another storyline that I want to talk about, five of the first six Wizards games are at home to start the season. It's Boston and Cleveland at home, then on the road to Atlanta, back home against Atlanta, and then Miami and Golden State also at Capital One Arena. I have the Wizards starting 1-5. I think they'll split. I don't know if they'll win at Atlanta or at home against Atlanta, but I think they'll split. Again, I think the Hawks are going to suck. I mean, what are they? The same team that they had last year, plus Reese Hachette, minus Murray. And who else they bring in, like Dyson Daniels? Like, they're not good. They're worse. And they barely, would they make the play-in last year? I think they made a play-in last year. So, again, not afraid of the Hawks. I think the Wizards will split that, but I think they'll get killed by Boston. I think they'll get beat pretty handily by Cleveland. Cleveland always handles their business against Washington, so I think Cleveland will win. Split with Atlanta, and then Miami and Golden State. I don't think Golden State is good. But it's Steph Curry. It'll be an away game for the Wizards, and they'll lose. Miami, early season, they'll actually have people playing. They'll be healthy. And I think they'll come into Washington and win by a lot. So I think the Wizards start 1-5. And then right after that is a five-game road trip. At Memphis, Orlando, Houston, San Antonio, Atlanta again. I think the Wizards at best is like 1-4 on this trip. Memphis get killed. Orlando get killed. Houston, they're better than the Wizards. They should win. The Spurs. The Wizards won at the Spurs last year, but again, they now have Chris Paul. They made some decent moves. They had a decent draft. So I think the Wizards lose that. And then it's Atlanta again. So maybe one of those, Atlanta and San Antonio. It's possible they go 1-5. 0-5, sorry. But if they go 1-4, that's a 2-9 start. And honestly, other than like a 3-8 start, maybe, I don't see them doing anything better than that. So it's gonna be tough. You're gonna be out of the playoff race right away, and that's okay. Some return games to monitor: December 5th, Daniel Gafford and the Mavericks return. The Wizards traded Gafford at the deadline last year, so that'd be cool to give him a nice little tribute video, standing ovation. Then the big one for most fans: February 26th, at home against Portland, Denny Avdija returns for his first game since being traded, and it is big because it's not even. It's the first game that they'll play against Denny. Like, they don't play in Portland until March 18th. I made sure to check. So it is not only Denny's return to DC, it's the first matchup of Denny Avdija playing the Wizards on opposing team. So that's going to be really cool, I'm sure. I mean, Denny had a huge fan base, not only like Jewish slash Israeli Wizards and NBA fans that were all huge fans of Denny, but also Wizards fans. He was a fan favorite here. I mean, he blossomed into a really great player before they traded him. So that'll be really cool to see him get a standing ovation. I know I don't think he wanted to get traded even from DC. So, that'll be nice. One national TV game. Bradley Beal returns to DC for the second time since being traded. That's a TNT game. Possibly the Wizards' last TNT game ever, considering that they no longer own the rights to the NBA after this year. But that's January 16th. It'll be cool. Like, the Wizards on national TV, I don't think they had any games last year on national TV. So it's going to be cool that they get some spotlight. But again, they'll probably get killed. The Suns are good. Bad season last year, but KD, Book, Beal, they brought in Monte, Tyus Jones. Tyus Jones also returning. That's another return game. But again, and also, I don't know if Tyus Jones should have a tribute video. I mean, the guy was here for one season, played 65 games, was great. But do you give a tribute video to that? I'm sure they will. I'm sure they will. He was also big in the community, so I get it. Very nice guy every time I talk to him. So I'm not gonna be offended if they give him his flowers. I think he should. But again, I don't know if they do that for people that weren't here for that long. Monte Morris as well. I don't know if he got a tribute video, and he was pretty similar situation to Tyus, as well. So yeah. That is that for national TV. They have five NBA TV games, but I don't count that because you have to pay for NBA TV. It's a subscription based. It's not like cable or anything like that. So I don't count them. And NBA TV really isn't national TV to me. So but it's good to know. Some legends coming to DC. Potential Hall of Famers, future Hall of not potential future Hall of Famers, coming to DC. Steph on November 4th, Steph and the Warriors come to town. Draymond, too. And Draymond's a Hall of Famer, whether you like him or not. Four rings. He's a Hall of Famer. Kawhi Leonard and James Harden coming to DC with the Clippers on the 27th of November. Then you got December 7th, Jokic and Russell Westbrook and the Nuggets come to DC. Big game, January 30th, LeBron, AD, and the Lakers come to town. That's always a big game, always a road game for the Wizards. All the bandwagon Lakers fans come to DC and take over the arena, especially when the Wizards suck. That's always where it's the worst because it's literally a sea of yellow and purple. Purple and gold, whatever their colors are, but that's the 30th of January. I know a lot of people. It could be LeBron's last game in DC. You don't know what he's going to do after this year. So I think that's going to be huge, huge game for a lot of people to go to. The 10th of February should be right before or right after the trade deadline. Chris Paul will come to DC with the Spurs. I would say Wemby as well. Wemby's only in year two. He's going to be a Hall of Famer. He's so good. A lot of people want to see him. So Spurs, Wemby, CP, that's February 10th. Then the 21st of February, Giannis, Dame, and the Bucks come to DC as well. So those are some big games to see, you know, games that you'll go to see the opponent, not really to see the Wizards, but because you want to see guys on the opposing team. And obviously, I mentioned like KD, Book, Beal, especially for KD being a future Hall of Famer. They'll be in DC. That's the 16th. That's the national TV game we talked about. So those are some big names coming to Washington. And then some rookie matchups, October 28th and 30th, Star versus Risache. The 30th is the one in DC if you want to go to that one. And then rookie matchups, November 11th, Wizards at Rockets, Sar versus Reed Sheppard. That's going to be a great game because Rockets fans were clowning on him. My guy, I think it's Rideau, I think, on Twitter, if you follow him. He does kind of what I do for the Rockets. He's a very good follow. But I mean, he was going in on Alex Sar. You know, saying thank you, Washington, for allowing them to take Reed Sheppard after Alex Sar really struggled, went 0-15. Reed Sheppard had a really solid game. So again, it's fighting words. You know, you can brag now, you can laugh about, you can point the finger at Alex Sar. It's easy to do that now when he sucks. But again, it would be really nice. And I'm sure my guy Damo, who went at Rockets fans, and the Rockets fans came at him for some of the dialogue about Sar versus Sheppard. I think it would be pretty cool for Alex Sar to show out against Reed Sheppard. And I'm not wishing Reed Sheppard plays bad. Like I don't care about that. If Reed Sheppard's great, it's great. Alex Sar should have been the pick, regardless. But it would be nice for Alex Sar to show out, especially against Houston with that whole two pick versus three pick debate. And then Sar versus Sheppard, Houston in Washington on the 7th of January. So to start the season. Those are some rookie matchups. Some key offseason dates before I let you go here. September 30th is Wizards Media Day. I went last year. I had a blast. Kuz in his blue hair, you know, gave some good points. Jordan Poole said, like, my green light is as green as DC. So it was cool. Obviously, cool for me because that was like one of my first experiences covering the team in person, getting credentialed. Went with my guy Marco from Bolts Forever. So I think I'm going to try to cover it again on behalf of Bolts Forever. So that's September 30th. October 6th, the Wizards are in Montreal to play the Raptors in the NBA Canada preseason game. So that's the first return to action. And then obviously they'll play the other three, I think, preseason games. I'm curious. I don't know. Last year, all the starters pretty much played. So I think they'll do that until the last couple of games. And then this is a big date, October 21st, the day right before the regular season starts for the NBA. It's the deadline for 2021 draft class rookies to agree to an extension with their team. If they don't, I don't think they can negotiate or agree to an extension, and they will then hit free agency in July next offseason. So that's the deadline for the Wizards to reach an extension with Corey Kispert. Again, the Wizards, I think on the 18th or 19th of October last year, barely beat the buzzer and got their extension done with Denny, which was 4 years, $55 million. So I think Corey, 4 years, 48, maybe 4 years, 44, 11 to 12 mil a year. I think that's a very fair deal. But again, if Corey thinks he can bet on himself and get more in the future, I get it. If the Wizards would rather put him on an expiring deal, send him at the deadline on his cheap rookie deal on an expiring contract, and they think that can get more, go for it. But that's also a key date to keep in mind for this offseason. But again, that's going to do it for this episode. I wanted to wait. I didn't want to put out an episode that was boring and filled with nonsense just to get something out. But I felt like this is a fun episode. Kind of got to rant a bit about that tweet I put out. Talked about some key offseason dates. Talked about Eugene Omorui and why I think him getting waived obviously cuts it down to one more person, but why I think that person will be Patrick Baldwin Jr. Then talked about the schedule. There's, you know, the Wizards are going to be really bad, but that doesn't mean there won't be fun games, fun matchups against some legends, Hall of Famers, really fun teams, and I'm looking forward to that. You know, a lot of times when the Wizards were bad last year, like what would get me excited is to just kind of watch other teams, because I know what my team is. They're not really trying to win, but these other teams are, so it's cool to see that. But again, it's going to do it for this episode. Again, if you have any questions, if you have any ideas about episodes, my DMs are always open. I respond to everybody, so feel free to send me a DM with any questions or any pod ideas or any, honestly, any guests that you want me to have on an interview. I've been lacking. I've been doing a lot of solo shows. I want to get into more interviews and get into more of doing it with other personalities. So if you have any Wizards fans or anybody that wants to join me on the show, my DMs are always open. Hit me up. I'd love to have other people, other perspectives on the pod. But again, that's going to do it for this episode. Appreciate all you guys for listening. That's going to do it. Go Wiz.